Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Founded in 1983, Joseph's House and Shelter in Troy, New York, is a community-based not-for-profit corporation that provides a continuum of homeless services to residents of the Capital District. Joseph's House provides emergency shelter or support services to an average of 1,700 men, women, and children yearly. Central to their mission is to provide non-judgmental services to end homelessness. The staff works to build relationships based on each guest's and tenant's strengths and capacities, treating each person with dignity and respect, and promoting self-determination that empowers guests and tenants to make healthier choices. These are unprecedented times, obviously. Joseph's House is working very, very hard to ensure that they continue to be prepared as whatever is down the pike. It has been devastating for members of this most vulnerable community, and it's a great pleasure to speak with our good friend, Executive Director Kevin O'Connor, to get a sense of how things are on the ground. Kevin, it's always a pleasure to have you on this show, on the program, and to do this work with you, and I thank you so much for being with us.
Well, I'm grateful. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. I'm grateful to WAMC to allow us once again to sort of highlight the journeys of those who are homeless in the Capital Region.
Well, the idea here is I want to spend some time with you today and then have you back in a week or two, and we can talk about some of the things as we maybe get a better sense of how things are going with the virus and with budgets and so forth. So I gave a figure, which I think I initially got off the website, but an average of 1,700 men, women, and children. Have you seen that number increase?
We've seen it increase in some areas and actually decrease in other areas. So we're a bit higher than we were the year prior. We've seen a 40% increase in unsheltered or street homelessness in the two counties we serve, in Rensselaer and Albany. The most startling increase has been in the city and county of Albany. And it happened pretty dramatically. It happened in March of last year, right after the virus and the publicity of the virus came out. And we think that a number of people were avoiding mass shelters for fear of contagion, despite the fact that the shelters are pretty safe places. The Capital District shelters have done a very good job of keeping it safe. But I think the perception out there was they weren't safe. So that contributed to some people not going into shelters. Also, I think that in the case of our shelter, particularly, shelters, plural, that our length of stay increased. We were focusing on keeping people safe in the shelter, and landlords weren't necessarily renting at the time. Right. They were hunkering down. Everybody was shut down. So the replacement fertility, the availability of available shelter beds at the time were diminished. I think that contributed to the count. Over 1,000, about 1,028, I think we counted last year, individuals in just Rensselaer and Albany alone that we engaged with street homeless. That's an extraordinary number, Joe.
It certainly is. So let's talk a little bit about where we are right now, of what you're seeing with winter. I know that this is, you know, I don't want to be too convenient about it, but I mean, this is a problem that exists and permeates throughout our culture and is around all the time. But when you have these extreme cold snaps and I know that has an effect. There are rules in place, so that does have an impact on what you do on a day-to-day basis.
In New York State, the executive, the governor of New York, has a what's called the Code Blue status, and what it is every county needs to provide shelter for everyone who needs it, everyone who's homeless, when the temperature falls between under 32 degrees or we have really bad inclement weather, and so that's available now in all counties, and that is reducing somewhat the number of people who were unsheltered. Last night we did a count, a person-to-person count and engagement, and we still located 40 individuals who were out there. They're staying in places not meant for habitation, abandoned buildings or cars, vehicles or lean-tos in the community. So we still have some that are out there. More are going in, and the real brutal last night happened to be 0 degrees. So in the real brutal temperature, they are going in at least temporarily. And hopefully when they go in, they're engaged well by staff. And we have to give kudos to staff that are working in these shelters and residence programs throughout the area. I'm tremendously grateful for their courage, for their dedication to the work through all this pandemic and all the changes that have happened and all the uncertainty that's happened through all this time. Really, we stand on their shoulders and they're doing great work. So hopefully, when folks are engaged in the shelter, they find it safer and they're willing to work on a more permanent housing plan, and that's the hope anyway.
I want to mention two things real quick, and then we'll get back to the meat of the conversation. But obviously, to help, you can find that information by going to josephshousetroy.org, josephshousetroy.org. There is also a way on Monday, we've been talking about it this morning, that we're going to start our lockbox and start our fund drive, probably start and finish maybe on the same day. Because of our friends at the Seymour Fox Memorial Foundation, they are making it possible that if you pledge $100 to WAMC, that frees the funds up to have one person be able to stay at Joseph's house and receive shelter, personal care items, 3 meals a day, use of the laundry area, the case management assistance, goal setting, identifying and accessing appropriate housing and other special needs to keep them out of keeping them indoors and not being on the street. So that is an opportunity, and you can, I mean, it all begins Monday, but hey, for you, you can call, you can go right to the online at WAMC.org and just go to the pull down menu. Or give us a call and do it that way. So we're going to be talking about that, but I wanted to have Kevin on today so we could have more time to actually talk, because we're all yelling and screaming phone numbers and stuff on during the fund drive, and I wanted you to really be able to tell us the importance of all this. You said something that really struck me a moment ago about keeping, rightfully so, giving kudos to your amazing staff, but you know, the work you do is so incredible and backbreaking anyway, but then on top of it, you have a pandemic where you have to keep it safe. And I assume it limits you in some way. So talk a little bit about what that experience has been like and how you operate. It's almost like, okay, you have to do this, but by the way, we want you to be blindfolded and do it backwards.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. That's an interesting analogy. We've had to do everything different, as everybody has.
Right.
But certainly in our work, again, our mission, providing non-judgmental services to end homelessness, it's a challenging but successful mission. And so we operate outreach programs, emergency shelters, and permanent housing programs, and each has the unique challenges that we've been faced during this period, not just due to the illness and the pandemic out there and the lockdowns out there, but also other components that are happening throughout the year, with challenges with funding, with challenges with staffing, and all of that. So we've definitely been focused down. We're looking down and seeing what the day presents to us, and doing the best we can to keep not only our staff and our clients safe, but also the community, because we're all connected. And if there's one wonderful thing that's come out of this whole mess of a year, is the generosity and the support we've gotten from folks. In our outreach program, I told you we saw 40% more people who were on the streets in Albany and in Troy, and people have really turned out. We've had restaurants folks who've come out and they've shut down, but they've kept their staff going, and particularly Feed Albany. Shout out to Jason and Dominic from the Savoy Tap Room and Yonos for organizing what's called Feed Albany, where they hire their staff instead of laying them off to provide food for our daily outreach. We go out every day of the year to meet the needs of the people that are out there with increased needs, and our supply chain just getting truncated in March. They really stepped up and did great things. But there are examples in all of the programs where people stepped up and helped us out. In our emergency shelters, it's been interesting because we've had to what's called de-densify. Our shelter is unique than other shelters, and that's not a huge mass shelter. We have bedrooms, and some of the bedrooms had three beds in a bedroom. Well, we cut them down to two beds in a bedroom, and we have a divider between each bed and reposition folks and have strict protocols of coming in and screening every time a guest comes in and out of the shelter. We also have families, and families, you know, they have children in school, and some of them didn't have laptops or access to all of that, so they had to do remote learning in a shelter where they share space with siblings and parents and all of that interesting stuff that's out there. So in our housing programs, and these are for folks who are formerly homeless, who had long histories of homelessness and coping with some sort of disability, mental illness or substance use typically, keeping them connected and not isolating so that we can help them continue to be successful in housing. And with all of that, we served nearly 2,000 men, women, and children last year. We only had three individuals who tested positive for COVID. So, again, kudos to staff. Kudos to the resilience of the people we serve. Everybody often diminishes the folks who are homeless and moralizes them having failures and being lazy and not caring. That's opposite than the truth. These folks are resilient. They look after each other. And it's inspiring. It's inspiring work to do, to see that kind of work. The placement, you know, ending homeless is the answer to homelessness. Housing is the answer to homelessness, the antidote to homelessness. And it's been a slower year. Landlords aren't renting as much, but we're being creative. We're getting folks out. We are still moving people out. We moved 83 people just from the street outreach program directly from the streets into housing, and another 300 people from our shelters into housing over the course of the year. So we're still doing our work. It definitely is different work.
One of the things that I always like to highlight about your mission, and you mentioned it, I mentioned it in the introduction, you mentioned it just a moment ago, this idea of non-judgmental services and to treat people with dignity and respect. And, I mean, that should be our mission in life in general, but but empathy has always been a key factor to what you do and so important to the work you do. And I'd just like you to talk about that for a moment of why that makes such a difference.
So it makes a difference because if you look and really think about homelessness, and you think about the growth of homelessness in this country, not just in this region, over the last 40 years, and I've been in this work nearly 40 years, 37 years now, the number of folks who are homeless, we're a fraction of what we see today. On any given night today, and we do point in time counts where we across the country make a person-to-person survey of everyone who's homeless, either unsheltered or in shelters. In the Capital District, we have about 1,500 people on any given night who are homeless, and 25% of them are children, which is a surprising number. But that's an outrageous number. It was a blip on the screen in 1983 when I started doing this work. And why is that? If you look at what's happened with our public policy around how we treat people who are poor, how we treat people with addictions and mental illnesses, and look at housing and the cost of housing and affordability of housing, all those things we are treating dramatically different. We are unfortunately coming into a cultural phase of personal responsibility, that somehow the people who are homeless have caused it themselves, and we don't see that. We see the systemic changes we've made over the last 40 years as really mushrooming homelessness, and the only way out of that is creating housing and supports for people to get to make important changes and to transfer into the community. So non-judgmentality makes a lot of sense then. It's not their fault, so we shouldn't judge them. Yes, there are maybe some personal behaviors that get under our skin. Yes, there are folks that through desperation, become addicted to substances. But there's systemic poverty, there's systemic racism. We've been talking a lot about that.
Sure.
And you know, in the Capital District, you're three times more likely to be homeless if you're a person of color. That's a sad, sad statement. And it's not because those individuals are making any choices to become homelessness. It's because of our systemic racism that occurs in a lot of our institutions, education, employment, health systems, housing, just to name a few, criminal justice. And so it's been encouraging since last spring. There's been a lot of discussion about that and reforms that are being discussed. And I hope that also applies to housing and homelessness as well.
Kevin, I'll just give you a heads up. We're waiting for the governor, who is expected to have his briefing today. he's been typically late, and today he may want to be late, so I don't know. But we'll just keep talking, and if I have to abruptly cut you off, I apologize, but I'd like to keep it going for as long as I can.
We're flexible. You know, working in homeless services, you've got to be adaptable, so I'm with you, Joe.
All right, so we'll keep talking until we get the high sign that he's coming through the door. But let us talk for a moment about it. I just want to remind people they can find out more information about Joseph's House by going to Joseph's House Troy, Joseph's House Troy, all one word, .org, and you can find out more information. Also, to hit two really important things if you want to help your public radio station and Joseph's House, you can do that. All you have to do for a $100 pledge to WAMC that allows the Seymour Fox Memorial Foundation to free up the funds to help one individual and give them a night at Joseph's House, including a warm and safe place to sleep, three meals, access to personal care, access to medical and dental care, legal services, and other support services to help them stay off the street. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org and go to our drop-down menu, and you can find that there, or just put it in the comment box, and we'll take care of you. Or you can give us a call, too, 1-800-323-9262. And, of course, again, if you want to find out more, you can go to josephshousetroy.org. So, Kevin, let us talk for a moment before the governor comes out about just what I mentioned that you talked about before of moving people out and into homes and so forth. Let's talk a little bit about the access to the medical and the dental care, the legal services, the support services that are so important. That goes beyond just what was, you told me this term, I three hots in a cot, right? That's the and you do so much more than that, because there is so much more to be done.
And you know, and that's not just in our profession. You know, school teachers are doing a lot more, cops are doing a lot more. We have to treat people in their whole need, and when folks come to us, many of them have had a journey into homelessness. It didn't just happen overnight.
Right.
There have been some relationship conflicts sometimes. There has been some significant changes in their life, and or perhaps some trauma that's occurred in their life. So we just can't say change and move. We have to respect that people are coming in with a lot and treating people with their whole needs. And so we are really good about asking people what they want and what they need. And most people, you know, need a safe place tonight. And there are secondary needs or maybe causal needs that related to their needing a place to stay. And so connections with mental health, connections with medical. We have a nurse on staff. We also have volunteer nurse practitioners who come to our shelter routinely. We have outside providers that come in. We've had a dentist who's been very generous to us over the year, who carves out a portion of her Fridays to see our folks. We have connections with legal services. There are a lot of great our shelter, it can't be successful without a lot of people helping us out. And there's a lot of collaborating agencies, other shelters that we collaborate together, homeless services providers, legal services providers, entitlements, the departments of social services in each county is instrumental in helping the folks to move to the next step, to get first month's rent, security, get emergency assistance, all together. So we have to provide that whole package if we're really going to end homelessness. And right now, we're doing our best. We're sandbagging a large problem here. We're doing our best to end homelessness for the people that we engage with, those roughly 2,000 men, women, and children we see every year. I think there's got to be a bigger plan out there in the world. I think there's got the bigger plan in our communities is building and allowing more affordable housing to be developed. Unfortunately, it's tough to develop that housing. There are some nonprofit agencies that are doing it, and some housing authorities are doing yeoman's work. But I get discouraged when I go into communities and there are fights about affordable housing being developed in our neighborhoods or on our blocks. And a lot of it is misconception. And a lot of it I get really anxious about because people are using their privilege to deny other people a basic need. I mean, we don't have a right to housing in this country. And it's sad. It's an injustice that we don't, that everybody doesn't have access to safe and affordable housing. There's incredible dearth of affordable housing for the folks that need it, the size of the folks that need it out there. And we need to do more about that. But a lot of the development we're seeing is high-end apartments and all of that. So
the governor is there, so I have to say goodbye to you, but we'll talk about Joseph's House more on Monday, and I thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Joe and WAMC.